Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the NRL Bulldogs Fans Podcast.
Welcome to this week's edition of the NRL Bulldogs Fans Podcast. As always, my name is Matt. Sitting across from me is Scotty. Scotty, how you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. I've calmed down a little bit from Friday, I think. Mm. How are you?
Yeah, it's Tuesday. Friday feels not that long ago, does it? Disappointing result, of course, on the weekend that we're alluding to. South Sydney defeating the Bulldogs again on Good Friday, 50 points to 16. I think there's going to be a few complaints, maybe a blow-up or two coming from us about what happened in the game. But before we do say that, I at least want to say, look, South Sydney deserved the win. They were the better team on the day. However, there's no way they should have won by that scoreline.
No.
And a lot of things contributed to that scoreline that was that seemed out of the control of out of the Bulldogs' hands.
I left with two feelings. Number one, Gerard Sutton should never go anywhere near an NRL field again. That's just one opinion. Or at least a Bulldogs game. Or at that least, game in particular.
At least one involving the Bulldogs, yeah.
Yeah. Number two was I was so damn proud of a lot of those young Bulldogs. Sam Hughes' debut.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't let anyone down. He also got a good shot on Latrell Mitchell too. He wanted to lay down and wait for try to get a voluntary tackle. No, Sam Hughes said, no way, mate. I'm going to jump on you and make it feel. Don't do that to me. I thought he showed some promising signs. You got people like Jacob Preston, who's became a fan favorite really quickly. First season of Top Grade. Might have to remind people that sometimes a little bit too. No Viliami Kikau, a star recruit. No captain, Raymond Fatala Mariner. Josh Adakar doing his ankle early. We had
bench. That's the first thing that went against us, wasn't it? In the 10th minute, Adakar's foot gets stuck in the ground. I don't know if you've seen the footage, but yeah, it looks like his foot gets caught in the ground and he bends over it in a unusual way, and obviously first concern from everyone at the ground was, shit, he's done an ACL.
Yeah,
given the way he reacted and the way he went down, turns out that it is a syndesmosis injury, so not as bad as the ACL, which is thankful, but still out for, 6 to 8 weeks, so it's going to be a big blow on the team going forward, but also in that game. That was the first sign of things not going the Bulldogs' way, but it didn't break the spirit. We had a bit of a reshuffle. Topity went out to the centres, which was obviously not part of the plan, and the Bulldogs stayed in it. And look, before we get into the big blow-ups, two major things, I've said this to you just before, Scotty, two major things swayed the momentum in favour of Souths, one in each half, I thought. One was the in the first half, the kick for touch from Burnham didn't find the line, and South's got quite a lot of points off the back of that almost directly. And the second one was the was the wrongful sin bin of Jacob Preston in the second half. South's scored a lot of points off the back of that. I heard somebody say in the crowd, South's hit 50. How is it 50? And obviously it's 50 because South scored 8 tries or whatever it was in a mathematical term, but I was right. There's no way that South should have been anywhere near 50 points. It's just unfair that that's what's up on the scoreboard.
No, it wasn't fair. And I will tell you, like, missing a kick for touch, this is not shitting on Burton or anything. It happens to the best halves.
Yeah, everyone's done it, yeah.
Everyone's done it. It's just a 101 error. You don't expect it. You never coach for it. It's like kicking the ball out of the full for kickoff. That shouldn't be happening.
Offside from a kickoff.
Yeah. It just does happen, though. It does happen. If it's Burton, probably felt the game and thought, I could probably chew off an extra 10 metres. And he's done it plenty of times where he's kicked the ball 40, 50 metres down the ground from touch. It wasn't like he went for like a 70-metre boot downfield and go, what are you thinking? It just didn't come off the foot as nicely as it normally does. And it's first time I've seen it happen to Birdo. So this is not me putting him down, but that's a 101 error that, you get the kick for touch. It's one of those ones where the coach sees the penalty, he almost puts his pen to paper, starts writing a little bit of notes, or starts talking to the assistant coaches about something, and then goes, what the hell happened here? Why does South have the ball? Why does the opposition have the ball in their hands? Like, what went wrong there? So that was an error I think what was even bigger was the Josh Reynolds penalty to Cameron Murray. And kudos to Cameron Murray. I don't know if Souths did their study, because Souths seem to always get the rub of the green when Gerard Sutton's reffing them against the Bulldogs, I've noticed. And if they have done their study, kudos to South Sydney being smart enough. Because, you know, you got to do that. Like, you know, players have got, referees got little study notes on players, and players got study notes against each other, or little notes against each other. Do that. I don't know if South had a study note with this one, because Cameron Murray milked a beautiful penalty, caught Josh Reynolds looking silly for a push that Josh Reynolds never did. It was a knock on. Josh Reynolds argued the case to his face went blue, but Reid didn't want to go for captain's challenge. Captain's challenge, looking at that every day of the week, that wasn't a penalty. It wasn't a penalty. Captain's challenge would have overturned it for sure. It was just a loose ball. But saying that Josh Reynolds interfered in the play of the ball definitely wasn't. I think he played Gerard there quite nicely, and he just made it look so naturally live. Because at first I went, oh, shit. That's a penalty. Then looking at the replay, Reynolds was not even involved in any of the mix-up, and I think Cameron Murray just milked it for what it was worth. And, you know, you got to do what's best for your team, and you can't blame, because if that happened to us and we got the penalty, we'll just take the smile and we'll take the 2 points as well. And we got away with one. But I don't know if that was a study thing, or if Cameron Murray just knows, or if Cameron Murray just felt the moment was at that time, you know. Because Souths were looking a little bit... they didn't look that threatening at that particular part of the game. They weren't killing us.
They scored all their points in the two waves. That's why I was pointing out those two things, Scotty. The one in the first half, one in the second half. They scored all their points off the back of that. I think Souths failed to find touch as well at one stage, didn't they? We knocked it back in, but we didn't get the wave that came after that, the upkick that came after that. And maybe that's where the Bulldogs could improve. Another area where the Bulldogs could improve is 30 missed tackles. You don't deserve to win a game if you make 30 missed tackles. Obviously, a lot of that would have been down that left edge that was makeshift and trying to do their best. But, you know, you can't make 30 missed tackles in the NRL and expect to win. I think, while we're still talking about the referee, 11 penalties to 3. That is ridiculous, isn't it? No. Like, I'm not one to say that the penalty count has to be even. It shouldn't be. It should be what it is. But I think that's a horrendous misrepresentation of the game from the referee standpoint.
I think it is. I think we you know, seem to struggle to get something. And I'll talk about a particular moment in a second. But one thing I want to say, in our control, I was watching that game and I was thinking, as a coaching point of view, poor Alamotti, he just looked lost at wing.
Yeah, I know where you're going for this, yeah.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, the things that are out of our control, and we will bag on the refereeing, because the refereeing standard was...
poor.
Very poor. That's a good choice of word there. could have been anything then.
I'll tell you what, lucky this episode wasn't recorded Friday night, because this would have to have a extreme expletive.
Yes, that's true. It was poor. But then there's certain moments, I think, was the fact that I'll get to... To me, Port of Money, kind of remind me, for flash on mind, but I can't remember the exact game, but I think you might know where I'm going with this. Willie Tonga played on the wing because of Matt Utah injury. And he just looked like, you know, world-class centre, Willie Tonga, one of the best there is, especially in the early 2000s. Like, he was just...
When
he
was on big top, rap was coming to Al Molly then.
No, well, he can be. He definitely can be.
Could be in the future, yeah.
But he was one of the best centres, especially when he burst on the scene in 2004. He was, you know, most threatening centre, Willie Tonga, at one stage, you know, taking out Justin Hodges out of the Origin team. You don't take Justin Hodges out without being world-class. Then he gets put on the wing. And then I remember watching that game and I was thinking, yeah, Willie Tonga's going to play wing. That's fine. Like, you know, not even worried about it. And he couldn't do anything right. It just felt like, you know, the shift one extra position. He just looked clueless out there. And it's so funny how that happens, right? It's only one more spot to your left for both of them they had to cover. But, you know, the defensive becomes a little bit different. You know, now if you jam as a winger, got to hit. Remember, hasn't Rogers said that? If you come out of your line, you've got to make sure you hit and get the person who's got the ball. You can't come out and let
that shut the play down.
Paul Amodi, I think there was a couple of times where I think he looked a bit nervous. Not again, 19-year-old centre. And he just looks like a centre. I could never see him going the wing. I could see him going the other way, going into the back row later in his career.
Yeah, possibly.
However, I thought it would be an opportunity to shift Avrilo to the wing. I felt like he would be someone I would have went over. I thought he would have been more natural on the wing. Then also you're replacing that speed for speed. Adokar and Avrilo, probably the most similar. I know that you're taking a speed from one side of the field, but then I reckon Topany would have played better just shifting him to the other centre. I thought Topany did a great job at centre. I thought he did fantastic, especially that's not the plan. He was never coming into play centre. To do that, like, you know, you wish you had Ockhambor on the bench that week. That was the week we don't have Ockhambor on the bench.
Well, everyone in the stands was saying, yep.
Yeah,
the one week you can't play.
Yeah, so...
Yeah. Like, yeah, look, I know where you're going with that. I don't see Avrilo as much of a winger either.
No, I don't. I just thought it'd just be more natural.
Yeah, we'll possibly. Look, he's played other positions and looked natural in those positions. A little bit of dummy half, a bit of the halves, of course. So you might be right there. I'm not going to be too harsh on that. They made a decision, probably didn't want to muck around too much throughout the game. Could have been worse, possibly, if they did. But
yeah, it's...
I take your point there, though.
It's funny, though, because it's like, do you just change one side, then you keep the other side exactly the same, right?
Yeah, that's...
Or
that's
do you tempo if your right side to fix your left, but then you have two makeshift sides? So I get where the idea was coming from. But yeah. I don't know if it's the fascination I have. We had Jamal Alisi on the podcast last year, I think it was, which was a fantastic podcast. So go back and listen to that one. There's a good plug.
Got rated well, too.
He was someone who would play right centre next to Hazmal Masri.
Yeah.
But there was multiple times when Utah in that 2004 year was injured or unavailable for selection or didn't back up after a Kiwis match, the mid-year test match, that Luisi would play left wing. And then someone like, but we also had Ben Harris at the time. So I was, maybe it was the obsession of putting your right centre into left wing, because, you know, Jamal Alisi looked natural. He looked like an absolute ripper every time he played winger. You could put him centre or wing and he just played well. Maybe that was
clouding my judgment. Jamal in those couple of years where he's at the Bulldogs, he was world class. In a year or two, his last year or two at Canberra as well, he was world class. So maybe not the best comparison. Nothing against Alamotti at the moment or Avrilo, but I think they've got some way to go to be compared to the great.
Probably might be my obsession.
Oh, let's see.
Yeah, it's maybe my obsession with the right centre on left wing.
Just a quick shout out to Reid Marnie, because I don't want this to go to be forgotten before we get the chance to say it. 50 tackles, so he put in another shift for the team. His effort has been uncrushable since coming across. South's made more errors than the Bulldogs. It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bulldogs had a quicker play the ball speed. Bulldogs completed at 71%, despite only having 43% of the board. South's completed at 74% with 57% of the ball. So you look at the stats, doesn't say 50-16 to me. I think that's the most frustrating part, right? I think most Bulldogs fans that understand where we sit in the competition probably was going into that game thinking it's likely that we'll lose this game.
Yep.
Hopefully we compete hard. Hopefully we're in with a chance throughout the game. If we pull off a win, it's going to be one of the great days. But it's likely that Souths would be too strong. I think the frustration really came from the scoreboard. And that's not against the Bulldogs, because just reading those stats, you can tell me if I'm wrong, but those stats don't say 50-16 to me, and I've been watching footy for a long time. But yeah, some of the calls, obviously, the history perhaps with that certain referee, and the fact that it led to a lot of points to Souths. So,
do you want to talk about some of those talking points in the game?
Yeah, I'll let you list them off.
So, I'll rank in what I think some of the big talking points were. The Jacob Preston hip drop tackle.
Yeah, well, I touched on that quickly. Increase in Bill led to the biggest wave of momentum to Souths in the second half.
So there's two points.
Sorry, Scotty. I'm just going to throw this out there. I was filthy when I found out he wasn't being cited by the judiciary. And I know that's a weird thing to say because you don't want him to be suspended. But it just confirmed to me that he did nothing effing wrong.
There's two points to this. Point number one is he did nothing wrong. He was going for a steal and he mishappened to get into a wrong spot. Now, to me, hip drop, classic hip drop, you can actually look in that game, and it's funny to say this, Cameron Murray does one on Jacob Preston. And then also saying that, I don't think Cameron Murray does it deliberately. But if you're going to penalize one, Cameron Murray's got his whole body wrapped around his legs and drops his hip into his ankle. Preston goes for a strip ball, goes wrong, and then falls on an ankle. Like falls off a tackle into the ankle.
Yeah.
Contact sport, and you could probably go to the Broncos and Raiders game to find it. Sometimes, if you know what I'm talking about, Rapana splitting his head open.
Yeah, yeah.
Just because someone gets hit or it has the same impact as a hip drop or same impact as a high tackle does not mean it's foul play. There's going to be moments when you're in contact sport, you're going to get into a position with everything legal and still get injured. And if you want to use, you know, people still getting injured, I know we're trying to avoid injuries, but look at Josh Adokar. No one around him injured himself. You play the sport, you play any sport, you're risking a chance of being injured. Point number two, I'm going to go off this, is, well, you said the wrong sin being, so my point number two now is we continue to play on. And if you want to listen to a good rant, listen to James Graham on Triple M.
If you haven't. I've heard that one. I felt like it went for about 5 minutes.
You can't keep going back. I think there might have been hatred as well. I think James Graham looked at Gerard and said, not again, not
the
again.
Figure, the half figure was almost out, wasn't it?
Yeah, like, you can't go back three tackles. We've got to stop doing that. Like, I don't mind if they said this could be a hip drop. And first of all, it wasn't a hip drop. So whoever decided that one is not on Gerard Sutton. He let it play on. It's been caught up by the bunker. He's gone back to do what he's been told. That one, you can boo him all you want, but it wasn't his decision. That wasn't his decision to go back for the penalty. But the hip drop was wrong. It was a wrong call. They went back three tackles or so to go back to penalise Jacob Preston. Then they sin-binned him, which was all wrong. I wouldn't mind if they go, hey, could we pull Jacob up for a second? Possible hip drop. We'll put you on report. You've got something to answer to. We're going to play on, okay? We're going to play on. But like it's happened before. It used to happen when someone used to get hit in the head or a late hit. You go back and go, last set, it looks like there was a late hit on so-and-so. We're going to put that moment on report. You can worry about it later. We might be wrong. Might not be that late, actually, but, you know, it looks a little bit, you know. But that's how it should have been handled. If they thought it was a hip drop, it was too late to call it. And if it's too late for the referees not to see it live, was it really that bad? Yes, I know there was an injury.
Especially because it's not something that happened in back play, hey?
Yeah.
Like the referee's watching the tackle.
Yeah, he's watching the tackle.
Not something like a late tackle where the referee might have his eyes on the ball. Late high tackle or something that's happened 5 minutes or maybe not that much. You know what I mean? 5 minutes to the side of the ball, the person with the ball and 2 minutes back. It's literally the part everyone's watching.
That's the tackles. That's what I don't like. I get that. If you hip drop someone without the ball, you should be sent off. That's terrible.
No, I'm not saying hip drop.
No, I know tackle, what you mean, but
high shot after the ball's gone or
because the referees then watch the ball gone to the next player, then could be a line break. There's the gap between the referee. And I'm happy to go back for those penalties. I'm not happy to go back for a penalty where the tackle was completed in front of the referee and everyone was involved in the tackle. The referees called the team back on side and said, let's keep going. Incident number two, which I think is a really big incident, and I think the NRL need to fix this incident.
Are we moving off hip drop?
Yeah, moving off hip drop.
Hey, just before you do that, I just want to read some quotes from Graham Annesley today talking about how the NRL is helping the NFL. In regards to hip drop tackles, it's becoming a problem in the NFL, and they're looking to act on it. And they're talking to the NRL on what the NRL's experience has been. This quote I'm about to read out, it's not really got to do with that. I'm just sort of setting the scene of where he was when he said this, but direct quotes. I'm the first to admit that there are some tackles that people would see as falling into the category of hip drops, which the match review committee don't charge. You can't say something is illegal just because there's contact with a player's leg. A player can get injured in a very legal tackle. We see that all the time. You can't just use the outcome of the tackle as the differentiator to say whether it's a legal tackle or not. A player in one case may receive a significant injury as a result of a hip drop tackle, and in another case, a player may receive an injury in just a straight around the legs tackle.
100%.
100%. Get your referees to rule that way.
100%. Sorry, you can't hear the injury. That's why I think Jordan Rapata gets the penalty too.
Yeah, well, okay, we'll see if you can draw that up again. What would you like to see happen in that instance, in the Rapata instance?
In that instance, it's a shame, but tackle's complete. You got to get off the field because you're bleeding everywhere.
Yeah, so how do you restart the game?
Well, I've only seen this on replay of the split. It was away for the weekend. I haven't seen the actual stoppage of the tackle. I've only seen the knee collide with the head. A few years ago, a very similar thing happened to the Bulldogs with Mitch Brown. Oh, I'll go back almost 10 years ago, actually. That's how long. He slipped in the tackle and got clobbered in the head and then dropped the ball cold, and then they picked up and scored. If that happens, I'm sorry, you slipped. I'm happy with the try. We were able to get back to the scrum. We got told to go back to play and do that again with him being knocked out.
Well, that's what I was going to say. So most people are saying it's a penalty because it's no attempt to make a tackle, which I suppose you could argue there was no arms in the tackle. There's the other side that's saying knock on Broncos ball. I just wanted to throw out there, I would have liked for the game to start with a Raiders play the ball, tackle one.
Yeah, I can live with that because, to me, yeah. I don't know, I've done it in football. Actually, I need people in football all the time. When you're chasing, especially when you're chasing a kick, and you think you're half a chance of getting it, and then you're like, oh shit, I've got to go from trying to get the ball to then to a tackle. And sometimes that happens. You're looking at it and you're chasing it and you're going, okay, I'm a chance. Now I'm not a chance.
Yeah.
Or you brace for contact. And then Martin Tapau, I don't think he's a dirty player, but then you can't use people's character.
Yeah. Look, I don't want to spend too much time on this. I was just throwing out a third option because, in my opinion, it was an accident. Probably shouldn't have been a penalty. However, I don't think the Raiders should be punished. For a player, his skull cracked open more or less in dropping the ball. So I would have been happy to go, that's a tackle, get someone else to play the ball. Once he's been taken from the field and looked after, play on. Anyway, let's move back to you. Yeah. Side note there, go back to your list, Scotty.
Okay, now this is going to be one, and this I'm going to attack this player very heavily. It is Tom Burgess. A very, very public, and I'm going to attack the NRL for a second as well. Both of us are males. We know how much it hurts to get anything into the nuts. We know it also, you're laughing because it's always funny when it's someone else's and not yours, which is true. I think there's no lower act in the game than a squirrel grip.
Yeah.
I think it's the lowest act. Sam Burgess was very famous for doing it and getting away with it. Or getting signed. Now, Tom Burgess, I'm not saying that was his deliberate intention to start the tackle. I don't think he went, oh, I see Josh Reynolds there. I'm going to have a tug. And that might have been a poor choice of words. But once you put your hands there, we all know what it feels like.
I think we've just reached our explicit rating.
But I don't mean to be. But you know what it feels like? If he just grabbed onto him, and was like, oh, that's how I fell into the tackle, and that's what I'm gripping onto to get, like, trying to grip onto something, and it happens to accidentally be someone else's genitals, and it doesn't pull. I'll go, that's just unlucky for Josh Reynolds. That's just unlucky. That's just, yes, that's going to cause a little bit of pain because as he falls, but there was a deliberate rip at it. Now, I think that's the lowest of the low. Like, you can always king hit someone. To me, if the NRL said, there's a 10-match punishment for you, I'd say that's fine. You do not rip at someone else's groin.
It's... some charge would have been nice, wouldn't it? I don't know how it gets that much views too. I think 60,000 views on Twitter or something, and no charge from the match review committee. Some charge, a fine, something just to say that's not good, that's not on, would be nice.
Josh Reynolds, definitely a lot of discomfort as well. It was absolutely shocking. I reckon minimum 5 games. That is not on. That's how you stick it out. That's how you get rid of it. That is an absolute pathetic, weak thing. Tom Burgess, if the luckiest thing for him was that the way the tackle kind of fell, that the players who were in the tackle fell off the tackle, except for Josh Reynolds. They fell like backwards off the tackle, which was Corey Waddell. Which, if there was anyone who saw it there, and it was a fight, that's on Tom, because that is absolute pathetic. That is just not on. If a Bulldogs player did that, I'll let you know, it'd be the same call. That is just not on. Josh Reynolds complained about it, fell to the ground, then decided on the offside. He decided to go offside to deliberately tackle Damien Cook, then slam him to the ground to deliberately give away a penalty so he could challenge it. I don't know how you challenge that. Josh Reynolds is just challenging his nut being pulled. Don't know if that's what he said. But we didn't have a challenge at the time to use.
And we can go back for an incorrect hip drop. Yeah. 5 tackles.
That is much worse. I would. Don't get me wrong, I don't want to have a broken ankle. But if someone accidentally fell and broke my ankle, I forgive them. I'll be like, yes, that sucks. I'm out for the year, or I'm out for 16 weeks, whatever it is. But I can forgive someone because accidents happen. That is not an accident. And if I wouldn't have blamed Josh Reynolds if he booted him square in the head. That is absolutely pathetic. And for him to play this week is absolutely piss weak. It's piss weak. And it's just pathetic that he's still in on the side, how he wasn't sent off the field. That's a no-go zone. I'm not saying if a Bulldogs player did it, same thing. Get off the field. You should be suspended for 5 weeks minimum. I would, if that happened to us next week, or one of our players didn't cop 10 matches, I'd be like, you're a dick. Well, that's what you're pulling. But get out. Like, that's not on. That's just completely not on. You never target another person.
Tell you what, if that happened at my workplace, I'd be throwing them.
Yeah.
I work in an office, ladies and gentlemen.
Can you tell me? You tell me, like, am I just don't like that at all? I just hate that. That's worse than getting punched in the face.
You don't want to see that. I get what you're saying. I was filthy after the game about it too. I was demanding 6 weeks. But I think the most frustrating thing is that there's no charge at all. Whether it was 5 weeks, whether it was 2 weeks, whether it was a fine for saying you're not allowed to do that. At least it's something. At least it's the game saying that's not on. The fact that there's been absolutely no charge out of the game or out of that incident, I think that's where the real sour taste comes from. That's the real poor form by the game. Would have been 12 weeks in the AFL.
should be, though. It's just frustrating.
What else is on your list?
Oh, I don't know. I've just
carried
some energy on that one. But, I did speak about the myth.
Oh, I got one for you.
Yeah, there we go.
How about Gerard Sutton standing 15 metres away from the play of the ball and calling the Bulldogs offside?
Yes, this was it. Was it? Were they in there? They were definitely in their 20, weren't they, when this happened?
Yeah, it happened a couple of times. I noticed it at 15 metres from the play of the ball. Also noticed that you're standing us back 12 metres constantly throughout the whole game too.
There was two of South's tries at least off a forward pass.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, both shockingly forward. Like you, I can live with, like, you know, if you're doing this, give it a try. You know what I mean? You give it a try. But there was two that were shockingly forward right in front of us both times, and the touchy was a good 15 metres behind both times.
Yeah, it's too slow.
And I know that the referees are athletes with themselves. The officials are athletes themselves. They've got to train. You've got to keep up with the speed. Can't do it? Go back to flag. Go back to cup. Keep up the speed that way. Get your speed up. If they come back from an injury, well, they shouldn't be officiating an NRL match, should they? They should be officiating Reggie's.
Especially, that's the side of the field. You've got to be out with the play. Feel sorry for the other. Feel sorry for the other touch judge who got a what's it called? A the ovation for calling a forward pass in the second half.
He got the Bronx cheer
for calling a forward pass. Guys, touchy switch sides at halftime.
Yes, and he was on it all the time.
Yeah,
he was always there. So not what the goal is, but you got to keep up with it. They were shockingly forward. Then it brings up, you know, another debate I'm sure we won't have today, but, you know, the forward pass technology and the ball. Because
you
get to a stage where those tries are awarded and you could say two or three of them come back to a scrum for the Bulldogs.
I actually don't think we'll ever do
that. No, I don't think either. But I was just saying, you can see why people debate that, though.
Absolutely.
There should be something. So, that was me done with my three big guys. I've got back to it.
So what, 26-16 Rabbitohs would have probably been more accurate, 28-16, something like that?
Yeah, I was thinking about 30 mark, but yeah.
Yep.
A 14-point game, a 12-point game?
Yeah. Well done to Souths, I guess, for getting the 2 points. They played to the conditions, and by conditions, I mean referee.
Another thing, too, this one's off the game, and I'll put a positive to finish. These two are off the game. Anthony Albanese, not a fan at all. Interviewing him, I don't like political support, but geez, that guy grinds my gears. Just absolutely irritating.
This is a positive?
No, this positive finish. Positive finish to it. Definitely, I don't know. I think he got booed quite a bit from our section of the crowd anyway. A few smart comments. I'm just not a fan of, you know, they're being interviewed and stuff, and it's not a South home game, and us putting out like special treatment for him. I get he's the Prime Minister. More than welcome to attend a sports game, despite him criticising other people doing the same thing and saying he wouldn't do it, but that's each their own.
I suppose it is a good thing to have the Prime Minister, the leader of the country, at the games.
But there was our Premier, Bulldogs fan, Chris Minns. Was he the counter-attack?
Yeah. I think a lot of people don't like politicians' support. Anyway.
No, I'm happy for him to be there. Just stop stealing our entertainment. Like, build up to the game. Just putting this out there. Especially Anthony Albanese, the most boring person to listen to talk.
Still waiting for the positive, Scotty.
No, I'm getting there, but I'm just saying, Jesus. Like, he's definitely going to hype anyone up, ever. The final one, the crowd of 35,000 plus, you might have the official attendance.
It's coming up. Yeah. No, it's not.
No, you take your time.
I think it was 35,211, I think.
I remember the 11, I just can't remember.
Yeah, 35,211. We called it, Scotty. You said 40, I said 30. We said 35 on the podcast and 35.
Yeah. So we called it as a team effort. But I'll tell you, leading up to the game, a bit of rain around prior to the game. And I heard the Easter show took a little bit of a hit with the numbers with the Good Friday than they traditionally do. A bit of rain. Then there's also the threat of severe thunderstorms roughly about 4:30. I think it was going to hit the same. Luckily, not too much. There was a bit of rain in the morning at the stadium, not too much in the afternoon. There was that little bit of shower in the second half, but nothing didn't blow over. Other areas of Sydney got hit quite heavy with a bit of rain. So to get the 35,000 and then have that warning in your face when the game's about to be on, that it's going to storm on you and quite heavy there, I reckon. I know, you know, weathermen. If they had the South African laws here, we wouldn't have any weathermen at all. But I think 35,000, you know, good crowd. I feel like we're building back up to, like, as we build as a team as well, we're building towards those, you know, crowds going back to that 40 as a regular, I reckon. We're getting towards that, pushing those crowds, because it does drop down to 30. We just want to get it back up to those 40,000 for a Good Friday again. So I reckon we're doing – so kudos to both sets of fans for that. Yeah.
Absolutely. All right, let's move towards player of the year points. Kick it off.
Well, do we have the same 1 point?
Yeah, we did.
So you would like me to announce that?
Yep.
We're giving our 1 point to Corey Waddell. He's the only forward to crack 100 metres. Got to 106 with his 13 runs. He's 41 post-contact metres, and he also made 40 tackles on the weekend. But another thing we need to remember, Corey Waddell's been playing a lot of middle off the bench. It's kind of turned into a lock off the interchange bench, and now he's been asked. I don't think he was going to be required to play the 80 originally. I think that was a plan to give him a spell or maybe even shift him into the middle. But, you know, he just does his job quietly. Going back on his stats, for those who are quick to jump on Corey Waddell, go back on his stats. And at the end of that game, he was in discomfort for the last 5 minutes. But yet he still was making his tackles and still taking runs.
Yeah, and with that, 1 point each from us, that gives him 2 to add to his total of 5 and a bonus point, of course, takes him to 6. So he's doubled his score in that situation. Now, for 2 points, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to go for a whole bunch of stats, but he scored 2 tries. He has a big say over the way we play as a team, and I think he always puts in Matty Burden for me.
Fair. I've gone with someone a little bit different. Someone who was called upon to play 70 minutes of the interchange bench, and he's a fan favorite, a podcast favorite, and everyone questioning why is he not always in the 17. Jackson Topiny, you know, planning, I'd say, to play a bit of back row. This definitely wasn't going to play the utility role because Josh Reynolds was there to do that. He ran 104 meters at center. 26 post-contact meters, 13 tackles. He was busy. He was putting his hand up. Yes, that edge got attacked a little bit when the Simonyi or Jackson, Jacob Preston, happened. But, of course, he attacked the side. And it just worked out well for South that, you know, we had a makeshift side as it was, and then we took one person from the makeshift side gone to the bin. The only solid player who was there on that edge the whole time, we sin bin him. And then we have 2 complete new people in different positions trying to fill the mess. But I think, you know, Topiny played really well. I thought he earned a spot. You know, he adds some versatility to the team as well. But apparently not.
Good effort for somebody not expecting to play centre. That gives the Player of the Year award. Looks a bit like this now. Or it looks exactly like this. Max King is leading it with 8 points. 7 points, Jacob Carraz. Corey Waddell, 6. Reed Marty, 5. Josh Odekar, 4. He won't be adding to that for much longer, for a while yet. Hayes Perham and Matt Burden on 3 points. Okay.
I'll tell you what, if Josh Adekar can, Josh Adekar's the type of player who can miss 8 weeks and still win it.
He is. Alrighty, let's quickly go through the injury list that I got here. Obviously, we know there's a few returns this week. Fa'amu Brown is tracking for a round 11 return. Chris Patolo, round 12. Franklin Pele, round 14. Adekar, round 15. Luke Thompson, round 16, and Bailey Biondiotto, round 21. Well, there is the latest update from the Bulldogs there.
There's some news around Luke Thompson tracking quite well. He said he could be pushing for a month to 6 weeks.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that one, but that's from the official website at the moment. With the update.
No, 100%. I did see that. It was just that something he said. I don't know if that's Luke trying to convince the player, you know.
Being positive, yeah.
Yeah, being positive. But if that's the case, that's a remarkable recovery because already cut down as it was. It was looking seasoned from the get-go to halved.
Alrighty. And the highlight from Good Friday, I reckon the highlight from Good Friday, the Bulldogs won in the New South Wales Cup, 26 points to 22. A try on the siren while trailing 22 points to 20 by Declan Casey gave the Bulldogs the win after a very poor second half where it looked like we were trying to throw the game away. There's been a few games this year in the New South Wales Cup where we've been in and out in the last few weeks of the New South Wales Cup. So hopefully that changes going forward and we continue to dominate in that competition. I know we're placed first in that competition now, but the cheer when Declan Casey crossed the line to give the Bulldogs the win in the New South Wales Cup was the biggest cheer I've heard at a New South Wales Cup game for a few years, I reckon.
No, that's 100%, and also give the New South Wales Cup team a pat on the back because you know, when there's injuries to the top grade side, not many people talk about it, but the New South Wales Cup team, your first reserve grade team takes a hit. It filters through the squad. But yes, they do. They still had a good enough side to win, which they did win, obviously. But to me, Souths would look at that game and go, "Ah, oh, shit! That was a game we could have, you know, taken a team out on top of the table because people said Souths were outside the eight. If you looked at it on a ladder perspective, easy win for the Bulldogs. Mm. Put in consideration that Bulldogs' top grade side had that many injuries and not just, you know,
worth remembering. Also worth remembering top five this year for the Source Cup.
Yeah. Oh, that's good to thank you for that. We could say, but that makes it even better than if they're outside the eight. They're not even in the five. That's right. But
so it looks to be a strong five as well. I think there's us, there's Norths, there's Newtown, there's Warriors and Penrith.
You can always lock them in.
Yeah, it's a good season. Good season coming up in the cup, I reckon, between those five in particular. Maybe one or two pushing to disrupt that five. Scotty, you've got to pull up the ladder for me in a couple of competitions. Only two other grades on the weekend. No, that's not right. We'll have to look up the Ron Massey later. No, Ron Massey had a bye, that's right. Two other grades on the weekend. We had the New South Wales Women's Premiership. Bulldogs got a good win, 20 points to 16 against the Central Coast Roosters, one of the heavyweights of the competition at Belmore Sports Ground. So fantastic result there. Scotty, you've got the ladder there?
Yeah, we're coming second on 16 points, which is equal to North Sydney Bears, who are heavyweight with the points. Just our for and against, our differential is 67, where North Sydney Bears is 172, to show you how the Bears. But for those who are interested, Central Coast Roosters, definitely a heavyweight team. They're sitting fourth now after that loss. So top of the table.
Always,
Isabel Kelly
Kelly in that Central Coast Roosters team yet again.
Okay,
so now we're moving to Jersey Flag. Jersey Flag was another loss to South Sydney, unfortunately, 24 points to 16. But Jordy Mazzone scored a double there. So congratulations to Jordy for that one.
And we are sitting third on the ladder after that loss. We got 8 points, which is coming from the three wins and a bye. And we got a for and against of 57. And of course, that one doesn't shock me too much, that loss, because again, the injuries at the top level filters its way down, and you know, people got to fill the gaps along the way.
Yeah, absolutely. But how good did the women's team go? I feel this is the best, it's got to be the best year ever for the Bulldogs in the New South Wales Women's Premiership and also the Tasha Gale.
Well, yes, it has been. You've been speaking about the Bulldogs' potential, the bid for the NRLW. You look at the Tasha Gale and Harvey Normans. Tasha Gale, we're on top of the ladder.
Mm-hmm.
So we're sitting on top. And then you look at the Harvey Norman sitting second, equaled first on the same points as first, for and against separating us away from first. Hello, NRLW bid. You know what I'm saying? Helps. I reckon it helps a lot because they go, what are you doing? I'm sure that would be one of the questions is that, you know, you're not just taking it because you want a team in the competition. You want to be in the competition to win it. Mm-hmm. Well, they're the next two levels.
We'll talk a little bit more about that in a second, but we'll look forward to bringing you the results of all the grades next week. They're all returned to the field, except for the SG Ball, who got the week off in the finals. Harold's Mats, though, play the Canberra Raiders at 3:15 at Campbelltown Sports Stadium on Saturday in their first finals game. So do or die that one, so up the Bulldogs in that game, of course, every other game as well. Now, you've touched on it, Scotty, a bit of news that dropped last week, but we missed it before we hit the record button, so we didn't get to speak about it. Now, it's, of course, the centre of excellence that's going to be put on Belmore's Hill. So a $60 million centre of excellence, the country's first NRL gender equal high performance center, which means the facility is split 50-50. And also, this news pretty much announces the NRLW bid for the Bulldogs heading into heading into 2025. So that's where we're bidding. There's a couple of other teams bidding for the team as well. The Warriors, apparently, they're odds on for it, leaving. leaving Canterbury, South Sydney and Penrith vying for the other spot. So if we don't get that spot, you'd imagine 2028, but this commitment, Centre of Excellence at Belmore probably plays big part in our favour, you'd have to imagine. Eight unisex change rooms, relaxation areas, integrated childcare rooms. The facility also has free gyms, 70-person theatre, shared learning spaces. Work is expected to start this year and take 2 to 3 years to complete. Some quotes from Aaron Warburton: "We are focused on building the most gender-equal sporting facility in Australia. Bulldogs are a family club and extremely proud of the diverse community." So fantastic information, Nat. I also just want to pull some interest to this bit of information. I'm just trying to make sure that my figures are correct. $60 million Centre of Excellence will come via a $40 million state government grant. And that was actually the state government putting together a kitty for people to apply to build Centre of Excellences. And if you don't know, that's the reason why they're popping up all over the place in New South Wales, which is a great thing for communities. And of course, the NRL has really jumped on and taken advantage of that. And why wouldn't they? Congratulations. $40 million from the state government. The club is actually putting in $20 million itself.
Oh, wow.
Fantastic. How good is that? Bulldogs, obviously, one of the biggest leagues clubs in New South Wales. That's probably where the money's coming from, not the football department, but that's all the same thing to me. Leagues clubs exist for the football club. So fantastic to see that we're putting our own money into this community centre of excellence as well. Obviously, it will benefit the club long term, of course, but I could be wrong, but I haven't seen other clubs putting their own money into their centre of excellences. So fantastic stuff.
Well, let me tell you, the Bulldogs facilities at the moment are top notch. They're good. They're really good. This is going to be even better.
Yeah.
It's going to be even better. I don't know. I would be say a lot of the things will be transported across, like, you know, things that, you know, your weights, doesn't matter what you have on them. Josh Reynolds is a classic person to tell you that. If it's 25, it's 25. Doesn't matter. But they've already got them all decked out in Bulldogs brand. That they would obviously have new equipment come through. They might have, you know, for especially I would imagine for the doing your reps, they'll have probably a gym to share between each other. You said there's 7 gyms or something.
Yeah.
So I would imagine some of the junior reps would share the gym, and they probably take all the old stuff for the junior reps. I'd imagine all the new stuff gets, the higher the grades go up, the newer and cooler the toys get for the boys. But in saying that, there's a decent gym on the other side of the stadium, which is where the offices are. So I'd imagine the offices get transported across as well.
Yeah, well, that's going to be the interesting thing, isn't it, watching that play out. So it does look like it's not going to start to the end of the year, or at least after our next game. Now,
I'm just thinking, though, there's a corporate facility area now where that gym is, what leads onto the field. Is that another bit of revenue for the Bulldogs when they play at Belmore?
Who knows if there's going to be capabilities for that or not. It doesn't look like that is the case from the photos, but could be wrong. What it does do is plants us in Belmore, doesn't it? That we're going to be there for a long time. South's recently moved from Redfern over to another area in their local area, so it really plants the Bulldogs in at Belmore there. So we'll be there for a long time to come with our training and all that sort of thing. But the capacity of Belmore is probably about 18,000 at the moment, maybe a tad bit higher.
That sounds about right.
Seats have been taken out from the railway end, if you will, since the 90s. There's seats back there where we put the Des Hasler's wrestling room that's turned into a storeroom. But obviously, what I'm getting at, Scott, is the first thing that came to my mind, and I'm sure a lot of people would be, how does this affect the capacity at Belmore Sports Ground? And also, what does this mean for future NRL games at Belmore Sports Ground? Mm-hmm. Now, if you're listening to the podcast, you're in luck, because I've messaged CEO Aaron Warburton to get the answers, and this is what he had to say. So first of all, I said it was really great to hear about the NRLWB. I'm sure all Bulldogs fans, we always get behind our teams. Big crowd. So New South Wales Cups normally, I'm sure that will continue into the NRLW. But then I asked him, how much will this reduce the capacity of Belmore Sportsground? And will it prevent future NRL games from being played there? And before I read out the response, Aaron's a great guy. Thanks for replying. I don't know if you'll ever hear this, but I thought it was a really great gesture from a club CEO. He didn't have to respond. It was a chance he wouldn't even see it. So thanks for him responding and also putting a little love heart on my message. Anyway, he said, thanks. That's still to be determined. We're hoping to keep the capacity as it is. The hill will reduce. However, we're working on several options to increase the capacity safely in others. I'm sure he means other areas. The goal is to still play a couple of matches there per season. So the answer to capacity is that they're looking to keep the capacity about the same as is by safely increasing the capacity in other areas. So it'd be interesting to see how that happens. But the hill will reduce.
I've got it. I figured it out.
Go on.
The old gym turns, which I was saying earlier, turns into a corporate facility. You can turn it, you said safely, it's a big room, really. If you strip it empty, it's a room. You just got to make it look worth the money. If that's a part of the upgrade, don't know if it is. So if you strip it, that's sometimes where the boys run out, sometimes at Belmore. They used to run out of the gym, remember? Because the gym was bigger than the actual change rooms itself.
Yeah.
One area. Can we rip down that wrestling pad now? Surely we get a storage unit in our center of excellence.
Well, that's what you think the obvious place is, right? They put some more seats back behind where the railway is.
Even if it's just standing in that section.
But I don't know how much. I think the question is how much we're going to lose. So it looks pretty significant from the artist impression. And how much, where can you add that all in? I don't think there's going to be one spot where we can add all that in. There might be a few different areas, but I'll be interested to see how it goes. Look, I'm a fan of playing one game at Belmore a year. That's where I've stood for a few years. It's great to play back at the spiritual home ground, but I think the game has moved on past the facilities that Belmore has to offer. And speaking to other people who attend Bulldogs home games, especially females, are saying that they feel a lot safer at a call in regards to going to the toilets. It's tidier, it's easier to get to, come back, that type of thing. So I think that needs to be taken into consideration as well. And like really, when it's a hot day and you're standing inside a cubicle toilet, that's not the product I think the NRL should be aiming for, really. No, right? No. So we should be aiming for the Allianz Stadium experience, the CommBank Stadium experience, and that going forward. So
that's a good point you bring. And I know it sounds weird, toilets, it's all about the facilities as a whole. But good one you bring, and it just flashed me. I went to use the bathroom at Belmore and almost passed out using the toilet because I was sweating and hot. It was like a steam
55,
box.
55 degrees in the toilet cubicle, yeah.
It was like a portaloo in there. Oh, sorry, it is a portaloo, but it was a sauna in the portaloo. That's what I was trying to say. Sauna in the portaloo. And it was hot. It was not comfortable. I was sweating more. But then even as a whole, right?
Anyone making fun of us for not finding our words, just got to remember, guys, we do this as fun. At the end of a full-time,
jobs, yeah. But you go to a call, right? And this was 40 degrees. I think back to the grand final 2014, not the result. The day was probably the closest 2 days that I've had at a football game, where throughout the day we were there early, got sunburned, almost passed out at that game too because we're sitting in the sun the whole day. But you went back in between the stadium. And there's this cool type of breeze. It's kind of cold there. And you drop temperature quite dramatically at a call. You go to the bathrooms, it's always cool there. It's always cold. And but in between the stadium, it's always got that cool.
Relatively speaking.
The temperature's like a good 10 degrees. I reckon it's a good 10 degrees cooler. And you can, we're going to Belmore. I felt like I was going to the toilet. I had to, the temperature went up for me to go to the toilet, which is really weird. But yeah, I get what you're saying. The facilities, and what I wanted to applaud you on was as two males, and you know, it's a lot easier. And some, like you said, you mentioned females and that, and some females, we, if they're listening, while their eyes, what they know about toilet issues, because I cop that quite a lot. You mentioned females. I've also heard fans say they probably would have went to the Bulldogs Tigers if it was at a core, because it was a little bit cooler. They know they're guaranteed they're in shade, or they knew for sure they were in shade, or like, you know, the shade's both sides of the stadium. If you didn't like where you sat, you can sit in general admission where there is shade if the sun was beaming on the eastern side of the stadium, it normally does. Oh, the western side, sorry. That you can kind of go to the other side, you go to the other side of the stadium and just sit in the general admission where the shade's at, where the shade's gone halfway over the top. So, yes, you don't get your quality seats, but you're in the cool while watching the game. There's only one grandstand at Belmore. There's only one shade. Yeah.
I suppose that's the other thing, right? Like, obviously, not every game at Belmore is going to be 40 degrees or 42 degrees or whatever it was. But when does it become unsafe for the people standing on the hill for 4 hours watching two games of football?
It was unsafe for us in the grandstand.
You could argue that it was the game this year was unsafe for those people. There was reports of people passing out and, you know, fainting and that sort of thing. So, look, I don't want to bag on Belmore because it does hold a special place in my heart as well. But, you know, you can't knock it down and build it into a modern stadium. And I think the game in the club has probably outgrown it, to be honest. Before we say goodbye, Scotty.
We haven't spoken about the game this week.
Well, yeah, we're going to get to that as well. Okay, we're not going to say goodbye for a little bit. I just wanted to say, I would love a situation where Belmore Sports Ground becomes the home of the NRLW. If the capacity is 12, 14,000, whatever, how good would that be to start off with? And then have the girls grow the crowds to a certain level, like when it's not a doubleheader, of course, grow the crowds to a certain level and then grow out of that stadium as well in 20 years or so.
Yeah.
And hold standalone games at a core or elsewhere. That would be fantastic. All right, yeah, there was another example of us doing it at the end of a workday, being tired. We've almost forgot this week's game in the NRL. Of course, it's the old rival, Scotty. It's Parramatta in Parramatta at Sunday at 4 p.m.
Yeah, it's gonna be close to a sellout again. There's gonna be another big crowd. It should be a big crowd. Combank. Two teams at Noyan Kachava, two teams who almost couldn't stop the Tigers from a comeback.
Yeah.
Two teams that both struggled. I want to say, without looking at it, you'd say Parramatta would be favourites, but I think the Bulldogs would be going, you know what, this is definitely a game we could win. Because I think Parramatta would be first to admit this, and I'm not trying to say they're not. They're probably obviously playing last year's grand final, and they're currently coming 14th. We're 13th on the ladder. Yes, I know it's like a bit of for and against. They haven't lived up to the expectations. They've had a harder draw, I suppose, or a difficult start to the year. I think there'll be a side who should make finals. That would be the minimum.
That's the thing, though. From Parramatta's perspective, up until last week, you're saying, look, they've had a really hard draw. They've been in games against some of the better teams in the competition. They're going to turn it around. And then they perform like they did against the Tigers. And you go, oh, are they? So, yeah, tell you what, if Parramatta plays bad against the Bulldogs as they did against the West Tigers, we should win.
But I even look at the games where they beat Penrith, right? And all I could think after that game was, God, when Penrith is awful. And they beat, like, Panthers lost by 1 point. And every time the Panthers have lost this year, and the Panthers would be another team who'd probably say, shit, we should be, you know, we're not tracking as well as we want to be tracking. But when every time the Panthers, well, no, they're currently second as I say that, but I meant, you know, there's a couple losses and, you know, just un-Penrith like for the last few years. Is that every time they lost the Panthers, you've gone, hey, they haven't been nowhere near their best. They just don't look right and they're just losing games closely.
Yeah.
You just feel like they're going to turn it around. You just knew that was going to happen. It's just, is it going to happen this week or next week? It's the kind of question for Penrith. For Para, I don't have that same question. They should be in the eight. They should be coming. They made last year's grand final. I think if you make last year's grand final, unless you get a ton of injuries, You got to be there again. Not at the, like, you know, there's about again. They just haven't lived to it. Yes, could this be the game? They turn it around. They'll be thinking, yeah, this is an opportunity to kickstart their season and really get a starter. However, to be a little bit upset, they get Tevita Pengar Jr. comes back this first game. He should be ripping and tearing because he's missed everything. Viliami Kikau is back. Raymond Vitale Marin is back. Now, if we had that pack last week, it'd
be very interesting, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Look, I actually don't have much else to say because you've tipped off all the points I was going to tip off on this week's game. The only thing I will add is that it's a big rivalry game, and whether it's South versus Roosters or Dogs versus Eels or Broncos and Cowboys or whatever other combination, Dragons and Sharks you could think of, anything can happen in these games. So throw the form book out the window. Everything you just said, as much as I agree with it, as much as in another game, it would definitely be something that you know matters going into it. It's Eels versus Bulldogs. Anything can happen. So we'll see what happens there. Sure, it will be a great atmosphere at Combank Stadium, it's called now, Western Sydney Stadium in Parramatta. Let me read the team lineup. I probably should have done that at the beginning, but anyway, Hayes Perham's the fullback, Jacob Carraz and Braden Burns onto the wing. I was wondering who would replace Josh Adakar. I'm actually quite happy with that. Played really good in the Shores Cup. Really good player as well, so good on Braden.
I mean, he's going to be a strong finisher. It might not be speed to finish up, but he'll definitely push a lot of people out of the way to get over the line.
I was thinking maybe Darrell Skelton, but not disappointed with Braden Burns on the wing there. In the centre is Jake Averillo and Paul Alamotte. Halves are Matt Burton and Kyle Flanagan. Up front, Max King, Reid Marnie, and as you said, the return, Tita Pengai Jr. Do we believe he'll start, or do we believe Ryan Sutton will come off the bench?
I'm actually going to throw one. Corey Waddell starts.
There you go. Cool. I reckon, yeah, it's probably more likely Pengai Jr. onto the bench hour before kickoff, but we'll see what happens. Second row, Viliami Kikau and the non-suspended Jacob Preston. Raymond Vitale Mariner returns at lock forward. The bench, Josh Reynolds, Jaden Ockenball back from suspension, Corey Waddell and Ryan Sutton. The reserves is at 18th player is Carl Olaapu. And then we've got Jackson Topany, Samuel Hughes, Declan Casey, and Andrew Davey. So you'd probably say Declan Casey's above Darrell Skelton there too. Serrato's mine.
I'll give you two players to watch. I'm going to go, two points. I'll say Tevita Pengai Jr. I reckon it's going to be treated at number 10 as, you know, the premier prop type of thing. I won't be surprised if Tevita doesn't really ever start for us, but just gets a number 10 because it's like that's his pecking order. You know what I mean? Like him and Max King are your props. They're the ones. You know what I mean? Like that's because I could be wrong, but I just got that feeling that Tevita Pengai Jr. would just carry that 10 and just a lot of the time be on the bench to start the game. And just because, you know, your people are aspiring to get the number 10 jersey. Some coaches do that. Put the better players, even if they're not starters. But a player I want to watch, I reckon Ryan Sutton. Now, the reason I'm going to say Ryan Sutton is because Corey Waddell, who's going to play in the middle in this game, I'm sure of it, because, you know, you got Josh Reynolds who brought that ball playing lock. Raymond Vitale Marin can push up the prop as well. You got Ryan Sutton and Jay Nockham on the bench. Josh Reynolds, Jay Nockenbaugh, Corey Waddell. Ryan Sutton. I want to highlight Ryan Sutton. I think he'd be one to say he hasn't had the best year coming across. Definitely a very passionate guy. He threw his headgear off last week with disgust when he let Cameron Murray score. He took a lot of blame for that. So it's always good to see, you know, a player take it to heart, like, you know, care as much as the fans do. But if you ask me now, if Luke Thompson is available in 4 weeks... I think Luke Thompson gets back in that team, or if Luke has to play a week or two in Cup just to prove his fitness to get back into the starting 17, is if this was our 17 going into Luke Thompson's returning, is Luke Thompson takes Ryan Sutton's spot. I cannot punish Corey Waddell.
On form, I agree with that. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, Corey Dell, look back at his stats. If you don't believe us, look back. Like, I think it was one of Corey Dell's worst games of the weekend. 103 minutes, only forward to do it. You can say, oh, Jack Stoppie, no, he didn't play forwards. He was playing centre. Remember that? He was a makeshift centre for the game. Only forward to do it. You put him in the middle. He'll play prop, he'll play lock, he'll play second row. Corey Woodall adds that little bit of versatility in the pack. But Ryan Sutton is a middleman. Doesn't add that versatility. So there's a couple of things playing in Corey Woodall's favour, but Corey Woodall just gets through the meters. 130, 140, 150 off the bench. So yeah. If you ask me if Luke Thompson's available next week, which I know is not, but so Ryan Sutton, I think, you know, it might be a moment where he's got to, you know.
It's a little while off. Who knows what the injury list might be at that point.
I'm just thinking, Corey Dell, in saying that, he might take out Jaden Ockenball. Not worry about the 2 points either. True. But I just feel it's a game for Ryan Sutton to go, hey, got the 17 on my back now. Mm. Even if I do start, I've got competition now. The troops are coming back slowly.
Which is a good sign for us. Yeah, shame that Adekar went down when he did, right? Like, not only it's always bad to lose Adekar, but with the troops coming back in this week, would have been great.
Chico. Chico and Adekar on the same side.
To finish on some positivity, the referee this week is Chris Butler. Enjoy the game, guys. See you next week.